We're on.
Record now, recording. Okay. All right, then we have to see who uploads the low push up. Have a minute yet? Okay. Chaya, this is for you. You asked me about Yisurim. So here you have every place Chazal mentions Yisurim, and you can play with it. I don't know exactly what he said, but there's a lot that can be worked out.
Yes, man.
You asked me Yisurim, God only gives Yisurim to someone who can handle it. Okay, today is September 2nd, 2018. The Ashkenazim started Slichas today. The Sfadim are way ahead of us. And if you know what's going on in the Torah world, we have a long way to go to say that we're from Jews. It's very, very upsetting and depressing, the machlokes and what happened in Panovich and Yeshiva Panovich last week is beyond comprehension.
What did they do?
Doesn't matter what they did. You follow the news. It's all on, all over the TV, all over the newspapers. But you see, today when you sin, everyone is watching. At one time, a person did a sin. No one knew what was going on. Kol masecha v'seif v'nichtavim, olson shamat, yad kotevet. No one took it too seriously. Today, they have iPads in the basement. Which every kid has it, legally or illegally. And there's a whole video of chairs being thrown around in the basement in Panovich. And as a Litvisha Yid, it breaks the heart. We've lost the battle. Reb Anta would be very upset. And we've lost the battle. If I had my way, I would close Panovich down, start all over, interview every kid, limit it to 300 students. Every yeshiva should be limited to 300. Good Rebbeim, and Be'ezrat Hashem, Slichas should have an impact, and we should really become good Jews, not just trained monkeys who are putting on tefillin, as I've explained many times in my Musa talks. Okay, today we begin, I want to say first of all, Shavuot Tov Mevorach to all those sitting in front of me, and to all those listening across the wide expanse of Baruch Hashem, the Jewish community. I have a sad task this morning. One of our early alumnus of the Kollel, Rabbi Yosef Klausner, a genius, tremendous ability, and a sad life when all is said and done. Never married, passed away young. Even his passing was as sad as his life was, and literally, b'bechinat make mitzvah, no children, no one to sit shiva. Let me say a few words about him. And let me go back to 1957. 1957 was a very sad year for Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Everyone knows about it. Everyone writes about it. Had triple avelut within a few months. First his mother died, then his brother died, and finally Churban Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Bet, his wife died. At his brother's Levaya, and there too it was a very sad end. This was Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. He was just a few years younger than the Rav. Here he had an older brother who was a Gaon Adir, his only younger brother, but the youngest of the five children was Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, who was a Gaon Adir. And Shmuel never yet found that niche in life where he could express his learning, his knowledge, his gadlut b'Torah. He was a very dear person to me. He was my chemistry professor, and we had a very warm relationship between professor and student, Ke'ein Talmud and Rebbe. But the Rav was overwhelmed, he died, there were no children, no continuity, no one that would carry forth the Soloveitchik name in Reb Shmuel's family. And the Rav eulogized him. It was a eulogy that you can never forget if you were there. And the Rav quoted from Divrei Hayamim, I believe it is. Let me see if I have the quote here. Yeah, it's from Yirmiyahu Lamed Dalet Pasuk Hey. And the what quoted Yirmiyahu came to the last melech, Tzidkiyahu, and here is Tzidkiyahu, who's going to go into Gullus, is going to see the Churban, is going to suffer so much, and the prophet tells him, Bishalom tamut, ובמשרפות עבותיו המלאכים הראשונים אשר היו לפניך כן ישרפו לך והוי אדון ישפטו לך כי דבר אני דיברתי נאום השם. And here you have the prophet is telling Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, yes, you're going to suffer, you're going to go through such deprivation, your life will end in exile, and the king of Babel will take and rise, and oh, what he will suffer at the end, and nevertheless, you're going to die in peace, and they're going to mourn you, and they're going to burn big funeral. The burning is indicative of the king dying, and his possessions being burned, the king is no more, no one can inherit him, and they're going to mourn you, and they're going to cry out, Hoy Adon Yishpatulach. And the Rav told an amazing story, it's part of the family tradition. There was a great Rav in Warsaw, the Briska dynasty had tremendous derech eretz for him, it was Rav Yaakov Gesundheit, maybe some of you heard of the name. Rav Yaakov Gesundheit, I've had the privilege, I taught direct descendants of his. He has living in Yerushalayim and living all over Israel, direct descendants that were going back 200 years. And Rav Yaakov Gesundheit was the Rav of Warsaw, Gaon Adir, and he had such agmas nefesh in his life. He was arrested. I remember one time the Rav broke down in tears when he told the story that Rav Yaakov had enemies and they were malshin, they snitched on him, made up charges, fabricated charges, snitched on him to the government, and in the middle of Lechad Dodi, the police came in and arrested him, and the Rav broke down in tears. He said, "Vastas main fayid, daven in Kabbalah Shabbos and singing the Lechad Dodi, what it means for a Jew to daven Kabbalat Shabbat and to sing Lechad Dodi, and when you're in ecstasy, they take him away to jail." And he could never be Rav in Warsaw again. He wound up all his life never achieving what he could have achieved. And the Rav said at his funeral, the Rav's Elter Zeder, for whom he's named, Rav Yosef Dov Be'er Soloveitchik, the original Beit HaLevi, the father of Rav Chaim, and the Rav said, my Elter Zeder came to eulogize Reb Yaakov Gesundheit, and at the funeral he gave a eulogy that everyone was astounded, quoting from Yirmiyahu and asking the very question, what are you telling Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, that the way they burned for your father, your grandfather, they're going to burn for you, and they're going to mourn you, and Hoy Adon Yishpatulach, and they're going to call you a master, and what kind of consolation is this? He suffered. What are we talking about? And the Beit HaLevi explained, not everyone in life achieves what they could have achieved, what they should have achieved. Not everyone finds his niche in life. Tzidkiyahu HaMelech was a great king, was an Oved Hashem, a person of total surrender to the needs of the Jewish people. He should have achieved a lot more. He should have died in peace in his home in Israel, in Yerushalayim. And yet, he lived at a time where he could never have his true fulfillment. His abilities, his dedication were never fully used, were never fully achieved. And the prophet is consoling him, yes, the end of your life will be bitter, will be difficult, but in the eyes of heaven, God will judge you as if you were achieved, as your great forebears, as David HaMelech, as Shlomo HaMelech, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, They will mourn for you. They will burn for you. They will display the same mourning that they did for the greatest king we ever had, because you had that ability. You had that capability. The genes were there. The chromosomes were there. Hayadon yakru lecha. They will call you an absolute master. And this was the eulogy, Rav Yaakov Gesundheit. True, you never were able to fulfill what you could have been, who you should have been, what should have happened in your life. You suffered, but nevertheless, Klapei Shemaya, we're accepting you like Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. You are an Adam Gadol. You are a giant generation. Klapei Shemaya, they recognize who you were and who you are, despite the disadvantages you had. And I want to say about Rav Yosef Klausner, he was, you have no idea this young man's knowledge. But sometimes in life, there are difficulties that we can't control. It's beyond us. No one in this room picked their parents. It's a fact of life. No one in this room picked their parents. Occasionally, parents can pick children. One time it was adoption. Today they have other methods. But no child picked his parents. You had to know Yosef's parents. Yosef's parents, brilliant, brilliant people. But they got married quite late. His mother was from a very fine rabbinic family. Her father was a great Talmud Chacham, the Stefanski family. Her brother was a great Talmud Chacham, published Sfarim. And she was an unbelievable, capable woman, totally at home in English, Hebrew, and Yiddish. She was the secretary for the Var Hatzalah during the difficult years that we'll talk about in our Monday class. Secretary for Var Hatzalah on the 40s, the terrible years, the late 30s, the 40s. And who thought of marriage? What she was doing was trying to save Jews. She was critical to the Var Hatzalah's operational success. Finally, she married, and you see, the Klaus, as I called him, was born to a father who was already over 50 when he was born. And here was a kid whose father never played baseball with him. Klaus was more at home with people three times his age than his own classmates, his own colleagues, with his father, with his mother, with his illustrious family, the Klausner name. He was fabulously at home. Went to Ramaz. He was a little kid. He could talk to Rabbi Luchstein as an equal, as an equal. Here, I can show you when I mentioned in the first year that I'm dedicating the first year I gave this year, 3 weeks ago, to his memory, a Talmud listening in Queens, a Rav, sent me a copy of a sefer he got at his bar mitzvah. He was 1 year younger than the Klaus. And they were good friends. Went to elementary school together. And the Klaus, take a look. This is a kid of 14 writing on the inside of the sefer. And there's no way you can correct his Hebrew. At 14 already, with gematrias, with rimazim. And I can show you a sefer I got from the clowns many, many decades later. A two-page dedication. Hebrew that you have to be an expert to write on that level. And you see, this was the kid. This was the clowns. This was the clowns growing up. You don't request these circumstances. Take my word for it, it's not the best situation when your father never played baseball with you in Crotona Park, in a sandlot field, on the west side with the Central Park so close. But that was the situation which he found himself. And I always said about the clowns, already in his youth, normally speaking, you all know It's a whole Shir HaShirim. There's a whole, if you look into the Medrash Rabbah, which did Shlomo HaMelech say first? But the accepted opinion is Shir HaShirim he said in his youth, Mishlei in his middle age, and Toheles in his old age. And that's the way it should be for most people. The clouds already in Shir HaShirim was already in Kohelet at the same time. He was mature beyond his years. Now, how did I first meet him? All right, now here we have to go back in history. 1969, 50 years ago, this would be the 50th year, a school was organized that changed the course of Torah history in the Anglo world. Like everything else in life, time moves on. I built the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County in the 60s. I was mice and nefesh, my wife and I, what we did to turn the earth. This was an area entirely conservative reform. Believe me, if you go back to Maplewood, South Orange, New Jersey, and stand on the street corner and say, "Does anyone remember Rabbi Rothkopf?" People will walk by, they won't budge, they won't say a word. "Are you Jewish?" "Of course I'm Jewish. You remember Rabbi Rothkopf?" Whoever heard of the name? That's life. Life moves on. You can have the greatest achievements in the world, 60 years later, gone and gotten. That's the reality. And BMT, today you mention the name, the only ones who remember the name are cab drivers. Mm-hmm. When you say you want to come to this building, some of them will look at you, Yeshiva University, Gruss, BMT. They'll remember BMT if they were driving in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, etc. And that school was the first school to export Torah to the Anglo world. And that school changed my life. When I look at all that happened to me in my life, that school really was a moment in time where I was the right person in the right place at the right time, going back to 69. And a few years later, Klaus came into my life. He already, if I recall correctly, he was, I think he was still on the original location, Rehov Abarbanel. If not, he certainly wasn't Rehov Neely. It's all before this building. And he was a kid, a chubby little kid. You could see right away this kid had a world of knowledge. But I got to know him. I got to know him. And I see this kid, until he came to BMT, he never had a teacher who knew more than him. He went to high school, went to Ramaz. He had teachers. Doesn't matter. He had more knowledge. In BMT, first time in his life, he was floored that he met teachers who knew more than him. All right. And I got to see who I'm dealing with. And I'll give you a little story. Moshe, you intend to go into chinuch, or you're not sure yet? Dayanut, chinuch, rabbanut. There's a lot open to you, Rab Tzvayi. A lot open to you.
I don't think Rab Tzvayi.
You know, all right, say that you have a lot of choice. Your grandfather didn't have all the choice you have. Take my word for it. In your years, you know what he was suffering. Thank God. You have a living example of how to overcome challenge in your immediate family. Kanayin hara. I have nachat, because I know your grandfather not from yesterday, from 62 we first met, and I know his story, and when I see you and your cousins and family, this is our revenge against Titli Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. All right, but let's come back here. So I knew already what I'm dealing with. So now we come to the final exam. And I have to be honest with you, I think I've told you more than once over the decades, I never ever gave an exam in the state of Israel. I was a terror as a Rosh Yeshiva in YU. You can ask Joseph Epstein in Hanof, Rabbi Epstein, when he got an 82 in my exam, he called his parents in Syracuse. He was overjoyed he got an 82. I was all right. But when you come in Aliyah by boat, it humbles you every year, coming a little closer to the Kedusha. So I never gave an exam, but I would give an assignment like, what am I looking for in Israel? What was I like and what am I now? When I came in now, you know, I wanted to see what the kids think. So I can still see it happening. I give the assignment and then I say, "Klaus, you don't have this assignment. You're exempt." I could see his face lit up, you know, like, doesn't have to... From you I want 2,500 words on Babe Ruth and his influence on American culture. And he looked at me, Babe Ruth, I don't think he knew what I was talking about. But the clowns went to the National Library. It was before a computer. Today, it's no big deal. Today, you open your computer, big, you follow me today, Chaim, right? You open a computer, what's the big deal, Babe Ruth? I mean, it's unbelievable today. You carry around in your hand all the knowledge in the world, all of Shas and all of Paiskim and all of Bar Ilan, and it's mind-boggling what you have if you know how to use it properly. Of course, there are other things on it that are not so good. But Uvachata B'chaim, the clowns went and handed in a paper 2,500 words on Babe Ruth. So I need not tell you, we bonded. And then he goes back to YU, and he tells me afterwards, and this too, you have to have a feeling for life. He feeds in, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva, my good friends, the faculty at that time. So I'll mention a name again. Maybe some of you will recognize that most of you already forgot. Rabbi Yehuda Parnas, Teddy Parnas. Remember the name? Was a Rebbe in YU, a beloved Rebbe. Later, he leaves YU. He's not satisfied with the level of religiosity, and he is one of the founding Rebbeim of Lander College. He's not a youngster today, and I wish him health, and I understand he can't give a shir anymore, but I loved that. We were very, very close. The Teddy and Hannah were among my heroes and Malka's heroes. So now he feeds into Rabbi Parnas' class. And Rabbi Parnas is taking attendance, you know, the first time. Joseph Klausner, are you related to that apikoros, that professor Joseph Klausner, who was at Hebrew University? And the poor Klaus has to say, yeah, that's my father's cousin. You follow? Again, do you know who I'm talking about? Professor Klausner, the historian, the philosopher, the apikoros, Ashtikel and apikoros too, all thrown in together. And Teddy Parnas says to the poor little Klausner, are you related to that apikoros, the famous professor Joseph Klausner? And Klausner has to answer with a straight face, yes, that's my father's cousin. By the way, he's also related to Reb Yisrael Klausner, who also was a tremendous melumad, but he was Takra 100% frum. He wrote a magnificent volume in the 30s on the famous cemetery in Vilna, where all the Gedolei Yisrael were buried, the Vilna Gaon, Rav Chaim Eisowitz, later buried there. He wrote this before Rav Chaim Eisowitz died. The Yaseid HaVolda, Shoresh HaVolda, is buried there, one after another. I have the volume. Klaus gave it to me, and that whole volume is worthless today. Can anyone tell me why? That when the communists took over Lithuania right after World War II, they destroyed the whole cemetery and built the biggest soccer stadium in Lithuania on top of the cemetery. They did the Jews a little favor. They allowed them, you know, tell me history now. They allowed them to rebury the Vilna Gaon, Reb Chaim Isaac Vyshinsky. And last week, where did Netanyahu daven? At whose grave? He and Sarah? You saw the pictures at the Vilna's grave. The Netanyahu and his wife visited Lithuania, visited Vilna, and they davened at the Vilna Gaon's grave. A guy named Rakefet preceded Netanyahu by a few years. If you open Washington, you'll see a picture of Rakefet davening at the Vilna Gaon's grave in 1989, when it was still under communist control. But this was another relative of Klausner. The best story that captures Klausner, and this is worth a movie. He now grows up and he's in the Rav Shir, and we remain constantly in touch. He's in the Rav Shir, and in 1977, the Rav gave a famous drasha in memory of his wife on the Haggadah. Those of you that heard me speak in New York the Rebbe's 25th yard site, the big talk I gave at YU a few months ago, at the end of March. So a good deal of what I spoke about, teaching Torah through the Haggadah, it was all from that talk. A good deal of it was from the talk in 77. And in that talk, one of the points, the Rebbe developed 9 different points on the Haggadah. One of the points he developed, interestingly enough, I just read in one of the freebies that they give out here on Erev Shabbos, the question was raised as well. Tell me, Moshe, how many cups of wine do you drink, Leil HaSeder?
Four.
No, and then tell me, in Karen Biavna, were there any people drinking 5?
I wasn't in Karen Biavna, but Seder.
But we're at Seder. But you know where? The whole Machlokes, where the four Rakasha holds in his Haggadah, you have to drink a fifth cup of wine. Excuse me?
It's not an accepted opinion.
It's a machlokes. Not the end of the world if you drink 4, not the end of the world you drink 5. We're not dealing here with Kiyum.
It's not in the Bible.
No, I know, I'm well aware. So it's a fifth language, they claim. So the Rav, based on the Mora Nevuchim, this you'll see, the Mora Nevuchim says that you absolutely shouldn't drink a fifth cup, because Leil HaSeder, the purpose of Yetziat Mitzrayim, this Ta'avdu et Hashem al Ahar Hazet, it's Kabbalat Torah. The Chag for Eretz Yisrael, the fifth cup, is Sukkot. Sukkot is the Chag of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the 4 Lashonot of Geula, those are what you drink for on Leil HaSeder. But the concept that God will take you and bring you to Eretz Yisrael, that's for Sukkot, not for a fifth cup. And the Rav developed the idea. Klausner was a little bit upset. What? That Leil HaSeder, you don't bring in Geulat Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Kenisa La'aretz, and the Klaus Kedako Bekodesh, with his tremendous learning, every word I'm telling you is true, wrote a 25-page responsa, I'll call it, quoting source after source that Eretz Yisrael is tied in with Pesach, and you should drink a fifth cup as a result. I mean, not everyone discussed the fifth cup, but they all discussed leaving Egypt, Eretz Yisrael. It's all part of the same saga. Leave it to the clowns. He made photocopies of the paper. The whole shiur, it's not like today, you have instant communication, but we found out in Israel soon enough. He made photocopies, and the Rav then in those days gave shiur Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Not like in my time, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now it was, when he came to New York already, he stayed an extra day. He didn't have the strength to rush back immediately. And when Thursday, he goes over to Rebbe, and he gives him the 25-page analysis. And the whole class is witness, and the Rav takes it. I'll look at it. Yeah, okay. And the Rav goes out, the car is waiting, gets on the plane, goes back to Boston, and everyone is wondering what will be when the Rav comes back on Tuesday. And sure enough, Tuesday the Rav walks in, looks around. I don't know who took attendance then. In my days, the Rav took attendance, but I'm pretty certain in 77 he probably had a shamus. The class was too big. It was much bigger than in my time. And now he's ready to begin shiur, and in front of everyone he looks at Klausner. Yosef, you're a bigger bucky than I am. And the Klaus's face lights up. The Gadol Hador is saying to Yosef Chaim Klausner, you're a bigger bucky than I am. And then the Rav pauses and says, but I still don't agree with you. And that ended it. But Klausner was the happiest kid around. A bigger bucky. Yes, Avraham.
He was 19 years old, I think, then.
9 years old, and the Rav looking at him and saying to him, you're a bigger bucky than I am. But then he pauses, But I still don't agree with you, Gevat, the Rav. You knew Rebbe like I, Baruch Hashem. Then the clowns comes back, and he's my student in the Kollel. This is already the early 80s. And here I'll tell you a fascinating story that I'll come back to in a different context when I'm going to have 1 week of classes, two classes, totally different than everything else. I'm going to call it the Shari Tfilah classes, because I was supposed to give these two lectures in Shari Tfilah and I was sick. I had no voice. It's this past July, so they paid me for the lectures. If I don't give these lectures, I'm a ganav, I'm a mamish ganav, terrible. Or a goslin maybe is a better title. What do you say, Moshe? Ganav or goslin? Mamish Gazlan, Pshuto Kamashmao. So 1 week you're going to hear me announce the Shari Tfilah lectures. The Sunday class is going to be very serious, dealing with Rabbi Rachman's proposal, Rabbi Avadya Yosef, and what I consider an honest approach to the Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. You'll hear a lot of the Rav's understanding as well. Monday class is going to be the Rav in Berlin, and what the Rav went through, the influences upon him, what he had to accept, what he had to reject during his seven good years, as the Rav called it, in Berlin. And we'll deal with this at that time, but I only want to deal with the clowns and tell you a true story, Bididi Haviyofta. When I was doing research on the Rav's life, and I was giving 22 years ultimately in the Kollel, so one of the questions that came up, what was the Rav's attitude to scientific Jewish scholarship? Chochmat Yisrael or Wissenschaftes Judentum, whatever name you know it by. All right, it's a very good question. And then, as my knowledge broadened, and remember what I told you, smicha is a license to start learning. Smicha says you're an amoritz, a boor, but you are yirei chait, and maybe you'll sit and learn now for the next 70 years and amount to something. So now I was broadening my knowledge, and I got involved with the Avodat HaMelech. Any of you ever hold the Avodat HaMelech in your hand? It's on the first part of the Rambam. It's by the Rav's uncle by marriage, Reb Menachem Karakovsky, a son-in-law of Reb Elia Feinstein, Reb Elia Pruzhana, the Rav's grandfather. That's the Rav's uncle by marriage. He was married to Badana, who was a sister to Pesha, the Rav's grandmother. You know the name Karakovsky, a direct relative also by marriage, taught in Stern College. He was professor of French in Stern College. Part of the family that survived the Holocaust wound up in France, and she was professor of French at Stern College. Karakovsky, it's a name that pops up quite often, both in Israel and in America. So Rav Nachum Karakovsky was a gonadia. He was of the Lashon Talmud. And he wrote a sefer on the Rambam, Avodat HaMelech. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough money to publish the whole sefer, so they published the first part, 29, 30, right around then, he died. And the manuscript on the rest of the Rambam was lost forever. He died and it didn't survive the Holocaust. No one knows what happened to it. A good deal of his family was wiped out during the Holocaust. Reb Menachem Karakovsky, Avodat HaMelech. I'm sure they have the sefer downstairs. I have it in my personal library. Now, when you open up that sefer, you are amazed. It is of a Lashon Talmud, an Adam Gadol, Shasim Paiskem, and he deals with variant readings of manuscripts. Wow, variant readings. Chochmat Yisrael. When you fellas go into a shir, who goes to Rabbi David Milisha? Who goes to Rabbi Asaf Bednash shir? They don't deal with variant readings of manuscripts. Yitzchak, Yitzchak.
We're not talking about courses.
No.
Nobody writes variant readings. But various readings in the Gemara, this is a legitimate stuff.
Well, of course it's legitimate. No one's saying it's not legitimate. But in the yeshivas you went to and I went to, no one got us involved in variant readings. In graduate school, that's when you hit Rabbi Weiss, Rabbi Feldblum, that's graduate school. But here the Avodah Tamelech gets involved with variant readings. Wow. Not only that, he asks his nephew, the young Gaon, Yosef Dov, the son of my brother-in-law, Gisi, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, he asks his nephew, can you check the reading of the manuscript in the Berlin Library? They had Kitve Yad that no one else has. And then he quotes what the Rav discovered for him. I spoke about this in great length when I dealt with the Holocaust. It was response to literature. So I uncovered four places where the uncle asked the nephew, do me a favor, check it out in the library. 1983, I was in America on Russian business. It was January, February. I blocked out the last day. I said, I'm not doing anything. Before I get on the airplane at night, I want to go and see Rebbe at the yeshiva. I found out he would be teaching. I went to this class. I went back with him to his apartment, and we sat and spoke and learning. His mind was good. Those were days already when it was in and out, but that day was good. And I asked him quite a number of questions. One of the questions I asked him, Rebbe, you helped out your uncle find Kitve Yad. How many times does he quote you? I found four. And the Rav says to me, his face lit up, that someone knew the Avodah Tamelech, knew about Kitve Yad, about his uncle putting him to work. He said, six times he quotes me. So now I had a discrepancy, four and six. I got back to Israel, I got back to Yerushalayim, I got back to class, and I say to the clouds, clouds, I have a little assignment for you. The Avodah Tamelech, I found four times that the Rav is quoted by his uncle. Rebbe told me six times. Could you look into it and give me a definitive answer? 1 week later, the clouds comes back. I was wrong, the Rav was wrong. Eight times his uncle quotes him. And I have a footnote. If you work, see my published work on the Rav, I have a footnote that eight different times actually give you the pages. This was Klausner. There was no one else in the world I could ask that. He could go through the Avodah Tamelech and flip the pages and find everything without an index, without a computer. This was the clouds. Now, there's something else. Everyone in this kollel who has become a Jew, a total Jew, and I mean that sincerely, they're Jews and they're Jews, but the total Jew is a Jew who lives al admat HaKodesh, Eretz Yisrael, what God has given us today, what we can build, what we can do, what we can achieve. Wow. You owe a tremendous debt of thanks to the Klaus. Do you know why? Originally, this branch, this program, this campus, some of you know, was forced upon YU. Whatever the reasons are, and I write about it in Washington, I publish documents, but I'm a Lamed Zchut in YU. It was a very difficult time in the mid-70s. Rabbi Belkin was dying, was ill. Money was a tremendous problem. Where would the future be? Rabbi Lam has a million and one problems on his head when he takes over as the third president. The last thing in the world YU needs is a branch in Jerusalem, 6,300 miles away from Washington Heights. Well, YU didn't have mazel. A kid named Rakefet befriended Mr. Gris. Mr. Gris befriended him, and as they say, the rest is history. But why you viewed whatever would be here, we are subject to America. We don't want an Israel institution. This is a kollel for Americans. All right, you want to spend a year in Israel, 2 years in Israel, but you have to come back. And the original rules and regulations were that the first year of smicha, you have to spend it in Washington Heights. Then you can go to Gross, but the final year, you have to come back to Washington Heights. Your smicha is Yeshiva University, United States of America. That's where it is at. Klausner was the first student who made up his mind. He is settling in Israel. And he went to war as only Klausner can, with endless letters, with endless sources, with endless quotes, demanding that if someone is settling here, they have every right in the world to remain here and not to go back. And believe it or not, why you caved in and gave in to the clouds. And from that time on, anyone who's staying in Israel can finish the degree here, get credit here, do his rabbinic internship here, and can live in Israel a covered ulatif eret, and he doesn't have to look at Washington Heights again the rest of his life if he so wishes. And you owe that thankfulness to the clouds. And that's an absolute fact. So what have we said? Yes, he was brilliant. He was a sweet kid. I can see his face in front of me. He enjoyed showing off his knowledge, but he was big enough to admit there were people in the world who knew more, had tremendous derech eretz when he scratched beneath the surface and saw who he was dealing with. But he had a lot of tzara beyond him. His parents died young. His father died. It's a shocking story. It's the only time I canceled class to go to a funeral, which was not Lo Aleinu family. Can never forget it. His parents came. He was rejoicing. And one day after his parents came, his father had a heart attack and died quite young, not much older than Klausner was when he died at 60. It's the only time. I remember I was teaching in Mechola. There were four classes in the morning at that time, each class 50 minutes, called an hour class. I remember at the end of my first class, I put up a sign, I have to go to a funeral, I'll be back for the fourth class. I knocked out class two and class three. My heart was breaking. His mother remarried, you might recall, a chazan from England, and it was seemed to be a fine second marriage, and then she died. She died, and he was left without parental guidance, without parental pressure. It was very difficult for him. At one time, he was engaged to a student of mine, an Israeli girl, who I still have contact, very deep contact with the family, because her older sister is my daughter's partner. They have a legal partnership already over 25 years, I would say, so we're very close. And mazel he didn't have to find the right place for his talents, for his abilities. It eluded him. But those who knew him, he taught at the OU Center. He and Rabbi Machlis bonded together. Mordechai Machlis, these are tzaddikim yesod deyolam. These are not normal Jewish people. These are tzaddikim. Mordechai Machlis bonded with him. He taught. He had a bit of a following. But ultimately, it's what I started with a half hour ago. The misrafot that they burned for Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. That's the way the clouds greeted in heaven. And I want to end off with an open Gemara, also Torah from the Rav. Anything I know, Moshe Shaliva Shalom Shalahu. I know nothing, but I studied with the Rav, so that gives me a little bit. Shabbat Daf Kuf Nun Bet Amid Aleph. And the Gemara says, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Meit she'ein lo menachamim, Holchim Yud Bnei Adam V'yoshvim B'mekomo. That a person dies and he has no one to sit Shiva, no one to receive Nicham Avel. So Rabbi Yehuda says 10 people have to go and sit, and others have to lenachem otam. And the Gemara tells a story. Hahuda shachar b'shvuvutei de Rabbi Yehuda. Someone died in Rabbi Yehuda's neighborhood. Lo hayu lo menachemim. Had no one to say nicham. Every day Rabbi Yehuda gathered together 10 people to sit. And after the shiva, Rabbi Yehuda had a dream, and the deceased person came to him and told him, Tanuach taikha shehinachta et taikti, that you should have peace of mind. What you did brought me wonderful peace of mind. Now, what is this Gemara saying? If you don't have shivas, halacha, family has to sit shiva, children, parents, a spouse, a brother, a sister. But there's no halacha, you have to gather people. What does this mean? Someone died, all right, so there's no one to sit shiva. No, there's something much more basic here. This Gemara is very powerful. You see, this is the secret of our existence, that no non-observant Jew can understand. The Western world is totally opposed to us. The liberals, read Haaretz, their concept of Judaism is a total Christian concept. What is the Christian concept of religion? It is a personal, individualistic belief, matter, concern. The greatest proof? Take Alsace-Lorraine. How many wars were fought between Germans and French over Alsace-Lorraine? How many millions died over the millions over Alsace-Lorraine? No, Christian killing Christian. You've seen red memoirs of World War I? They'd hold the truce Christmas Day. And one day later, they would be killing each other, Christian killing Christian, and no one raises an eyebrow. Look at the Muslim world. More Muslims have been killed by their fellow Muslims more than 100 times, if not 1,000 times, what the Israeli army has done in all the wars we had to fight. And they don't blink an eyelash. They send a car loaded with dynamite right into a mosque. Arab versus Arab. We Jews? Why is Rick Heffitt sitting here? I grew up in the Bronx. Ephraim and I grew up together. I lived on one side of Webster Avenue. I lived east, he lived west, three blocks away. What are we doing here? I'll tell you what I'm doing here. 1944. I went to school like every other day, Yeshiva Salanta. Webster Avenue, 176th Street. Day was no different. The sun was shining or it was rainy. Kids were happy, not happy. Normal school day. But we were busy talking about the expected invasion, Normandy. And kids, you know, all excited. I still remember my father with the WOR maps and where we're going to go. And everyone was a general planning it out. And we had a teacher, Mr. Markowitz. And Mr. Markowitz said, you're talking about the war, talking about the Allies. You think I'm an old man, he said. I fought in World War I, and let me tell you a story. And that story ended my life. Changed everything. What was the story? He was a young soldier fighting for the Russians. He and another Jewish boy. They were shooting at the Germans. His 17-year-old friend scored a direct hit. The German soldier threw his rifle down with his last strength, shouted, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That Jewish boy committed suicide 2 days later in a Russian field hospital. I write about this in Washington. Chaim Sabato, Harab Sabato Shlita, tells a similar story in Kiryat Hayovel of a Jew who was always sad. He never understood why. After that Jew died, he found out in World War I he had killed a Russian soldier who shouted Shema Yisrael. No, what are you saying? Jew versus Jew, Christian versus Christian, Mohammedan versus Mohammedan. What are you getting? Because we Jews have a dual existence. We're individuals, but concomitantly, simultaneously, we belong to the Jewish people. We have a dual existence. It's not an individual matter anymore. Sure, we're individuals, but we're also part of Am Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael, Adat Yisrael. When we left Egypt, what did the Jews have to do? Bring a Korban Pesach. No, did you ever question what does a Korban Pesach have to do with leaving Egypt? Because Korban Pesach was eaten al Hasova at the end of the meal when you were full. You know how many Jews had to share one Korban Pesach? Who here has studied Josephus? Thousands on one Korban Pesach. Each one had a kezayit. Unity, brotherhood, arevut. The minute we crossed the Yarden, look into this week's last week's Pasha, look into Rashi, look into the Sifri. Kol Yisrael arevim zelazeh. It's an amazing concept. A Jew knocks on my door at 10 o'clock at night. Could you make Kiddush for me? I don't know how to read Hebrew. I made Kiddush 3 hours earlier. I have to make Kiddush. If he didn't fulfill his chiyuv, that chiyuv now rests on me. And you see, the Rav said so beautifully, when we're Menachem Avil, we're Menachem on two levels. One individual, you know, you lost your parents, I said shiva for my father, my mother. Shiva, shiva, a loss is a loss. But Klal Yisrael has lost someone too. There's a second level to shiva. And that's what the Gemara is saying. No Jew is without family. No Jew has nobody who will mourn for him. Everyone is part of Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael. Yes, you left no children, but you left 15 million brethren who have lost a vital link in our existence. And this is the concept. Someone dies, no one l'nachem oto. 10 people have to sit down, and everyone has to walk past and say, Hamakom yinachem otanu b'toch sha'a aveli tzion v'yerushalayim. Now, there's an entire halachic literature on this topic. You look in the Ramah, you don't need me to guide you. Lo ra'inu, lo nahug. I can tell you, lo aleinu re'iti b'mo einai, al besari achazena, in Shvutami, has to go back to the 90s. Oh, we had children, youngsters who had come out of Russia, people whose entire life changed. One of them learned in Shvatami, had been married to a guy in Russia, left her behind, divorced her, no children, no parents. And finally, the Rosh Yeshiva told him, you can start life now, you know how to learn, you understand the Baha Hashem, you need panasa, and you got to get married. And he got a job in Tel Aviv in high tech. Coming back from that interview, and he was happy in there. Oh, that was the bus, if you recall, that the terrorist threw into the valley, turned it over into the valley next to Tel Stone. A lot of people were killed, and he was one of them. No one to sit shiva. The Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Leizer Kugel, that's an nainikul of Rabbi Levine, he sat down shiva every day, and everyone from Shiva walked by Hamakom Yenachem Otanu B'Toch Shabeletzim V'Yerushalayim. And this is why it is a wonderful recognition that we are eulogizing and recalling who Reb Yosef Chaim Klausner was, because there's no family. But he is our family. And we have to end off and say, Hamokom Yenachem Otanu Besoch Shah Avelitzium Yerushalayim V'lo Noida Da'ava Od V'lo Nosif L'Da'ava Od. Okay, thank you very much. That's the first part. It's hard for Rebbe. I never dreamt I would have to eulogize the clerics. He always had dreams. The best way to describe it, he never achieved maturity on one level. He always was a kid yet with dreams. Naive. That we can change the world. When you get older, unfortunately, you go into Mishle, somehow you become more realistic. And then when you're in Kahelet already, you notice you're sarcastic. You talk to Rebbeim, Kahelet, the generation is worthless. Rakefet is carrying on about Punajit, this one is carrying on about Vishnitz. I also have a lot of divrei Torah, I have to tell you. A Rebbe cannot afford the luxury of three different periods. I've taught Torah for 60 years. Chaim, imagine if the first 20 I was Shir HaShirim, the second 20 I was Mishle, and the third 20 I was Kohelet. That would mean my students from Shir HaShirim, all Mizrachiites. The second period, Agudistim. The third period, Naturakata. That would be terrible. A Rebbe has to live all three periods at once. And those of you who know me and know me well, you know darn well that I'm living Shir HaShirim, Mishle and Kohelet simultaneously. I shift back and forth at will, even subconsciously at times. That's a healthy attitude, because then you can raise proper students. And I can give you more Divrei Torah. That's the pshat. There's a Gemara that appears in Lo'ed Katna and Chagiga. Very difficult. No one understands the Gemara. Ki malech Hashem svakotu malachai. That a Rebbe im harav domela malech l'mal Torah mipiv. And if he's not like a malech, don't learn Torah. No, I want to ask you, Binyamin, you've learned Torah in London and here. Did you have a Rebbe who was a malech? Tell the drink. What do you mean? He has to eat, he has to drink, he has a wife, he has good. What a malach, he watches a baseball game there. What is it, soccer, whatever the sport is there. Okay? What one malach? Oh, no, that's not the pshat. We're lonit natara la malachei hasharei. The Gemara in Kedud. Come on, that's a fall over shas. All right. You know what a malach means? A malach is different than a human being. A human being, Na hayiti v'gam zakanti. When Jack and I met so many years ago, we were middle-aged. Today, look at Jack's beard. If I would have a beard, you'd think I'm 100 years old. That's why, Baruch Hashem, I remain clean-shaven like the Ramchal. I'm in good company, but all right, there are reasons why. We're humans. Oh, no. But a malach, time has no effect on him. The malach remains the same. Whenever God wants him, it's that malach is the malach is the malach. There's no past, there's no present, there's no future, there's no Shir HaShirim, no Mishle, no Kehelet. That's a malach. He doesn't have human limitations. Im harav domel a malach, if you have a Rebbe who lives it all together like a malach, no gradations, learn Torah from him. But if the Rebbe, today he's Shir HaShirim, he's going to be in Mishle, in 20 more years he'll be in Kohelet. Don't learn Torah from him. He's not like a malach. It's not going to be a good example, a good lesson, a good message. Okay. One second, I have to do one thing. Benjamin Baruch, he is not here. Yes, but he's coming. The Brit is very important. Called off classes for brief of great-grandchildren, kind her. But what I know for the future is I have a good chance maybe I won't be calling off class this year. At least two I already know. One more, we'll see what happens. Read me, Moshe. Okay, you can't, again, you don't have a choice, but my wife always says, oh, a girl, it's a pleasure, no shalom zachar, no brit, no pigeon haben, and a girl's a pleasure. Ah, oh, but then you have the wedding, all right, the wedding is the, those of you who are not yet married, Rakefet says, halacha l'maaseh, when it comes to a wedding, whatever the girl wants, you do. You had your bar mitzvah, you had your brit, you may have had a pigeon haben, the wedding is the girl's. Got it? Ketzim eragdum lefnei hakala. Doesn't say lefnei hachatan. Are you going to be in the class, Bezrat Hashem? Name?
Adi.
Adi Adin Dalajud. Last name?
Sina.
Spell it in English?
C-I-N-E-R.
Sina. Sina. And background?
Lower
Marion. Who was rabbi there? 61, 62. Almost got killed. Mentions going over that he survived. Whenever he passes, he has to make a bracha. Shasali Nes B'Makom Hazeh. A guy named Arnold Edward Rothkopf. Check it out. 1961, 62. Lower Marion. And 1 second. And Yeshiva College? Reitz?
Yeah.
What year?
Just graduated.
So you got smicha ready or graduated college?
First,
And they let you come here first year today. See, everything has changed. You owe it to the clouds. Okay, give me your email number in case of an emergency.
Adicinner@gmail.com.
adicinner@gmail.com. Thank you, Adi. Okay. Avram, you have no idea what it means if a young man from the Kollel, the vod in the Kollel is, my classes are a waste of time, it's way beyond them, they need shas, paiskim, they have to take exams, they have to wander with Rakefet and spend the next 50 years going through Shelet and Shuvit and everything, and here's a young man, and his chavruter is mad at him, it's not pshat, he had to come, he had to smack his chavruter's face that he's coming. Okay, back here. Let me, don't correct me with the facts. If I want your opinion, I'll give it to you, okay? We just said it very nicely. All right, my dear students, let me try to end off Kaddish today. It's a very fascinating topic. What's amazing with the Noda Yehuda, I showed you, and everyone's fighting who should say Kaddish. I don't have a mother, father, you're saying for a different family. And I got some letters from all over the world. Why don't they compromise? Do this, do that. But you got to realize, Kaddish is minhag. There's no halacha to guide you. Remember what I told you last week, that they said, we heard the same story. Herschel Shechter told the story on one Gadol Hadar, and what was it, the Chafetz Chaim. And I read on the Chazon Ish that they said the Magen Avraham gave all these rules. Who has the Kaddish? How did the Magen Avraham do it? So either the Chafetz Chaim said, or the Chazon Ish said, or everyone says they threw a goral. Whenever you get a question on Kaddish today, when people are fighting, I want the Kaddish, you, they, me, go round. You have to carry around a deck of cards in your pocket. You follow, and you do a go round. What's amazing about the Noda B'Yehuda, and this is where you can learn Jewish history. If you recall the Noda B'Yehuda, so that the person, that kid who died, didn't live in the community anymore. So the people who were saying Kaddish, and remember, only one Kaddish, it's not like our minhag, his father has no right to Kaddish. The kid died out of the community. The kid can't come back here. Only one family can get married. So the Noda B'Yehuda on page Kuf Yud, the source I quoted last week, says, what are you talking about where the kid lives? Unfortunately, we can't all live in the same community anymore because the Goyim don't want so many Jews around. So once one child gets married in the family, the other children have to move away. And he says, this is the way we do Shidduchim. And he says, in my entire rabbinate here and previously in Poland, the majority of Shidduchim were made from city to city. And it was literally a miut, an absolute minority, that a boy and girl married from the same city. And it's very often that the son must move away and not live near his father and mother. Umeolam lo shamanu chiluk b'inyan kaddish b'shnei avelim b'ir sheyiyeh hefresh ben zelizah. And the Noda Behuda says, we have never seen a concept that because you don't live in the city, therefore you don't have the right to say Kaddish. Absolutely not. And that's the Noda Behuda, and it's a beautiful source. When you're writing Jewish history, here you have a description of how people got married, and you had to leave your community. And as I told you last week, this is why people have different last names, the same family. They faked out the government. This way, I'm not part of that family, I'm from a different family, so I can get married even though my brother got married. That's not my brother, he has a different name. Same thing with the draft. They would fake out the family that you took already from this family, not from that family, sometimes change names. There are many, many reasons why. I can tell you another reason, something that's important for you to know. How many of you have gone bankrupt? No, what happens when you go bankrupt? You can't have a credit card. There's a whole question with a checking account. A person goes bankrupt. He lost his credit. All right, then you try to pay back a little, make an arrangement. Finally, you go back into business. In Europe, in Russia, you know what the rule was? You had to change your name. You had to say, I'm not the same person that I was before. Now I'm new, I'm a new person, I'm trustworthy, I'm honest. Now how does that affect us in this very class, in this very institution, where we are sitting? Chaim, where we are sitting now? Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak? No? Elchanan, can you give me Rabbi Elchanan's last name? Spector. Tell me, who is his most famous son? Maybe his only son? Reb Tzvi Hirsch Rabinovitz, myth of a Rav. Did you ever hear of his son? They say, I knew people who knew the father and the son, who yet knew Reb Chochanan and the son. They say the son was bigger than the father. They say the son was a gone idea, but he didn't publish like the father. That's why we don't know him. The father's very famous. He was Matir Agunot. He came out with the way, because Reb Chochanan's method of the Trei Rube, Trei Sveike, we are matir thousands upon thousands of agunot after World War II, after the 73 debacle here, what happened here with the Yom Kippur War, etc. It all goes back to Pesachon Spector. Now, this is his son named Rabinovich. Very simple. The son saw what the father suffered in the rabbinate. He made up his mind, he's not going to go into the rabbinate, he's going to be a businessman. No, when a big Talmud Chacham becomes a businessman, he goes bankrupt. So when he started all over and he went back into the rabbinate, he took his mother's maiden name. And that's how he is Rabinovich, and Reb Chochanan is Spector. Okay, let me go one drop for myself. Gentlemen, before Reb Moshe Feinstein became the posek for the United States, when I was a little kid growing up, and when Avram was a little kid growing up, we all heard one name, Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. I had the privilege to know Rav Henkin personally. His son, Adi, was my member in Lower Merion Synagogue. Professor Henkin of Columbia University, Alexander Fisher Hamilton was an international chair of law. He was a gone idea in his field, and he was a Shomer Mitzvah. Okay? So Rav Henkin was a Posek Muvhak. He headed the Ezra's Torah. We spoke about him in the Monday class last year. To make money for Ezra's Torah, he gave the rights to his publications, and they published. And money would go to Ezra's Torah. So I'm quoting to you from a Sefer which came out in the 40s. I remember when it came out, must be about 47, 48. Oh, was that an important Sefer in my life? It was called Eidut LeYisrael. And if you look into it, Eidut LeYisrael, today it came out, Kitvei Hagon Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, the first volume. It's page 164 in Eidot LeYisrael. The reason I'm saying Eidot LeYisrael 164, because this volume has a through of Hesparim republished. It's all photo offset. So that the pagination, you can have page 164 three times over. You follow me, Yitzchak? In the same volume, because they published three volumes in one, each one with its own original pagination. So it's page 164 in Eidot LeYisrael. And here he has a brilliant essay on Kaddish. And everything we've said, that this is all minhag, and how originally there was only one Kaddish people said, and whenever there'd be a machloket, he said, what you have to do is throw a goral. And this is what everyone, there's no other solution. People are fighting, do a goral. Ultimately, it caused too much difficulty, too many fights. Just in my shul on Friday morning, there was such an explosion at the 530 minyan. I'm happy to see everyone came back today. What was the fight about, that before 530, there's one man who talks in a loud voice? While he's talking, there's another guy saying Tehillim. So the guy saying to him started yelling, you're talking too loud, it interferes with my Tehillim. And he told off, it's not davening, oh, what went on? So not always can a goral save. So the minig developed, which is the minig we have, everyone says Kaddish together. Now, here Rav Henkin's absolutely right. Have you ever said Kaddish together? What does it mean? Sometimes you have one guy saying loud and clear, going too fast. You have another guy going too slow. You can wind up saying Kaddish and there's no one even answering to you. It may be two people next to you and that's all. So Rav Henkin says the best idea is to have the Shamis or the Chazan lead the Kaddish and everyone should say it together. That way everyone is assured that a minion is listening. All right, that's Minig Yisrael, and it is important, and I know in certain shuls that's one of the duties of the shamus, of the sexton. He has to lead the Kaddish. Everyone says it in unison. Everyone has a proper response. Beautiful. Then on page 166, he goes into what I told you. You want to really bring nachat to your parents. He says it's not the Kaddish that counts. The Kaddish, we really don't know how it begun. You know, we really don't know when it became part of the service. The Kaddish is the least important thing. And he says, when you have Yahrzeit, tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, that's what will be mezakeh your father, your mother. And the main thing is to give tzedakah l'talmid, talmidei chachamim, yeshivat, v'shar batei chesed sheba medina v'sheba chutz laretz v'din kedima la'eretz hakodesh. And you see, that all takes us back to the concept we are part of Klal Yisrael. We're not, it's not an individual religion. It's not that we go to a church on Sunday, go to a mass. I grew up in a Catholic neighborhood. I couldn't get over how quick their masses are. 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and they're out. By 10 to 11, the 10 o'clock mass is over. The 11 o'clock mass, by 10 to 12, the mass is over. They go home. What kind of religion? Yeah, they're popped in front of the TV. They're watching the football game of the week. They have beer and pretzels. And that's their religion. And you do a sin, you confess, and you can do any sin in the world, and you're told how many Hail Marys to say. I could never conceive. I know people who converted. I know many people. I just read about a case that I know. They came to see me in East Brunswick. I was in East Brunswick, was it? No, in Teaneck, from Boston to Teaneck, in Teaneck. And they got late. They came, they didn't realize how much traffic there is on Friday. And this individual married a Talmid of mine from a very well-known Torah family, and he is a brilliant individual. He's a teenager, converted, an Afro-American. His parents are both professors. So I remember many decades ago, I asked him, why did you convert? What? He said, so he told me when he was a teenager in high school, he started to, he wanted a religion that, to use his word, full time. And he searched, he said, my parents are religious people, but it's a part-time religion. The only religion that's full-time is Torah. And he became a Ben Torah. I mean, and I read this weekend in one of the freebies about a woman. It's one of the freebies. This teacher's talking about this student of hers who converted. Why? I wanted a full-time religion. And this is what Rabbi Yosef Elyakon is saying. It's you want to do something with your father's marriage. I told you, my compromise. I'm a Litvak, so I don't know if it's good or bad, but I don't stop him for the Yomer. My father died, made me a Yapon, didn't make me a Chazan or a Shulich Tzibur. I do the end of davening from Ashrei, that way I'm not a Ticha de Tzibura. But I make a siyum. I make a siyum in my mother's memory. I told you, my father died, Cholomayit, so it doesn't lend itself to this. And I make afterwards a little suda in the shul. We should drink l'chaim, the neshama should have an aliyah. Okay, now, my Talmud Steve Gross showed me a book, and I went through it over Shabbos, among many other things I was able to learn. So this book is called Kaddish, and it's edited by David Birnbaum, who's an MTA graduate, and Martin Cohn, who's a conservative rabbi. The associate editor is my classmate, Rabbi Saul Berman, who I trust you recognize the name. So I found this volume very interesting. It's again, it's probably a more liberal, I would qualify it as a more liberal orthodox attitude is the general theme of the volume, but they're very interesting articles in it of personal people trying to come to grips with Kaddish and what it means and how can you perpetuate memory and the history of Kaddish. What I found most interesting, two articles by two women, one by a Talmidah of mine, the recitation of Kaddish, a personal odyssey, Ruthie Wolfish. The name mean anything to you? Married to Rabbi Avi Wolfish. She herself was the head of, I think she just retired, she was the head of Torah teachings or Torah Shabbat Peh at Ephrata College for Women. Wonderful, wonderful. I call her a young lady. Probably she's a grandmother many times today. But to me, she's Ruthie Wolfish in my class in Mechola. And an enigma wrapped in a mystery by Adina K. Berkowitz. I checked out who this Adina Berkowitz is. She's scholar in residence, co-founder of Kol HaNeshama in New York. Anyone know what Kol HaNeshama is? She wrote a book, Gates of Joy, published by Ketav 207, the mini prayer book that is the first liturgical work in the modern era written by Orthodox women. Okay, and very nice what they write, very moving, but it sensitizes you why a woman would want to say Kaddish. And I have to say, Ruthie Wolfish said something that I cannot tell you how much it struck a responsive chord. She made the point that when her mother died, her father already had died years before, and she didn't have the need, when her father died, to say Kaddish. When her mother died, she felt it was the end of her era. It brought back her father's memory as much as her mother's memory. And I have to tell you, and Ruthie, you're absolutely right, when my mother died, so many years after my father died in 1980, my mother died in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, so many years later, when the memory started coming back, it was just as much about my father as my mother. And they write about their experiences with saying Kaddish. Very fascinating that some shuls, they were welcome to say Kaddish. Other shuls, they came into some shul that this is Berkowitz writes about, and she's behind the mechitza, and there's a guy learning, he's teaching, he has a chavruta, they're learning in the women's section, and they got hysterical that she came in and wants to say Kaddish, and they're screaming at her, what right do you have to say Kaddish? It's not women, get out of here. But it's not a rule across the thumb, because then she goes into some Haredi shul, and when the Gabbai sees she wants to say Kaddish, he is so kind to her and so nice to her. Now, I have to tell you, in addition to the sources I gave you a few weeks ago, due to the Sefer, I uncovered two more fascinating sources, and I'll end off the class with these two sources. If you recall, the Rav, remember we spoke about the Rav, we spoke about Rabban Soloveitchik, both being Mate or women saying Kaddish, the Rav for his reasons, Rabban for his reasons, Jack made a very good point that if you recall, the Rav talks about what he saw in Vilna in the Gaon's Cloys. The Rav's religious experience is from Europe. Rabban Soloveitchik talks about fighting the conservative and the reform. He already is total American. It's not the past that speaks to him, but what's going on in America. And both reach the same conclusion. I found that Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein both agree with the Rav and Rabban. Ran very interesting. Kitvei, this is now from volume 2 of Kitvei Rav Henkin. And this is from a Sefer edited by his son, Sefer Tshuvot Ibra. The Ibra, if you see it, it's Eliyahu Yosef Henkin. You see the Rosh Tevet, Eliyahu Yosef in Ibra. And very fascinating. Beginning on page Gimel, he says, I just read that a Rebbe in Chicago put out a piece of Torah, Rabbi Blyer, and he talks about a woman saying Kaddish to bring Nachat to her parents, to the deceased. And he says, let me discuss it, let me go into it. And he writes a whole country, talking about some of the sources we talk about, and here's the conclusion he reaches in this essay. And this essay was written in 1964. In this essay, he says, if the daughter observes Torah and keeps Shabbat, Kashrut, Tahara, Tzniut, which is the basis of our Torah existence, and she wants to say Kaddish, then she certainly can come to Shul. And in the Esras Nashim, when they say Kaddish, she can say Kaddish with the women. And he says there's absolutely no objection to this. However, if she's going to go into the men's section to say Kaddish, then she certainly has to be dressed with tzniut. In America today, the whole culture is against dressing with tzniut. And the shul is the last place in the world where we still can be mocked on tzniut. In other words, it's not riding on a bus, riding on a subway, walking on the street. If you go to Tel Aviv during the summer, the women are like at the beach, the way they walk around. In Yerushalayim, it's rare. You're not going to see too many women like that, thank God. But if you go to Tel Aviv, you have to really walk and the chveis put blinders on your eyes or just try to look down or try to think of Rakefet's last lecture and see the words in front of your eyes. And he says if we allow them to come into the men's section dressed irresponsibly, it's Harisa Pakadusha Hakolavad Chas V'Shalom. All right, that's what he wrote in 1964. All right, so he's Matir. Notice the question of coming into the men's section, you'll see in a moment. In 1947, he also dealt with it. And you see, his son put together all his tshuvot, whatever appeared in print. In 1947, he also dealt with it. And he says, U'b'chol zot, zachreini shabialduti, amra na'ara kaddish, Lifnei Hanashim Bekila Shel Chasidim Vireim. And he says, I remember in my youth, that's just what the Rav said, I saw women saying Kaddish in the frumest of shuls. And he says, Al Achat come in the United States. And here he's talking like Rakefet spoke a few weeks ago. Kaddish is what brings people to shul. Because of the Kaddish, many people opened their hearts to what Judaism is about. And he says, very, very important to continue this. Let the women say Kaddish as well. Now, here it's very interesting, and this I remember in my youth. My grandfather, I davened in a number of shuls growing up, because my grandfather, they would have fights periodically. Somehow, there was nothing sweeter than a machlekes in the shul, you understand? So, often, I remember I first davened Sarah Yaakov, then my grandfather had a fight over something, and we wound up in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim Moshe. That's where I was bar mitzvah, actually. And that's where I davened until I got married. And I remember, this was a big shul with a balcony upstairs, like a European shul. And I remember that occasionally there would be women standing in back of the shul saying Kaddish. So it seems, and Apenkin acknowledges this, that from time immemorial, there were women coming into the men's section, standing in back to say Kaddish, and no one objected. And he said, if it's one or two women, he has no objection, he can understand it. But not to do like they do in the German shuls, and that's what we spoke about, when you have only one Kaddish per person, they go up front and say the Kaddish. I saw this with my own eyes in the monk shul in London, and you told now in Ramat you can go see it. They would go up front. He says, a woman cannot go up front. This already would be a desecration of the kedusha, of the sanctity of the shul. So he says, better lachatchila, she should say it in the women's section. But if it's a situation that she feels she won't be heard, there's no one to answer, she can stand in back of the shul, but not to go up front. Finally, achron achron chaviv, Moreinu v'Rabbeinu Reb Moshe Feinstein. Here you open up the Igrot Moshe. This is Orech Chaim, Chelek Chamishi. I believe this is the next to last volume that was published, the Igrot Moshe was published in 1996. So that's 10 years after Reb Moshe died. And here you go, Orech Chaim, Siman Yud Bet, Subdivision Bet. And here you'll see something amazing. That Reb Moshe has asked, what he's dealing with, he's asked a series of questions by Reb Yaakov Elefant. It's from the Elefant family. I don't know exactly which one. There was a Reb Mordechai Elefant. This may be a brother, a cousin. There's the Elefant who works in the OU, who we cited in the Monday class last week. And he's asked a very simple question. Lo Aleinu, when's the last time you were in a Beit HaAvel? No? Now you think for a minute. Beit HaAvel, they give a klap, davening mincha. All right, so a minyan surges forward, and there are few women who are standing in the same room in back who are davening. Have you seen that or not? Generally speaking, my wife's generation, when disappearing to the kitchen, and they continue, nicham avelot, and gossip, whatever is of interest to them. I don't want to put women down, but they have what to talk about, believe me. But there are a new generation today, women who daven. In my own family, I told you, I have children, grandchildren. Women, they all daven. Everyone davens. To me, it's amazing. The canine horror. And the women are davening. No, do you need a machitza? I'll give you another example. Adi, did you ever grow up in Bnei Akiva? Where'd you grow up? Bnei Akiva. We're comrades in good things. So now you're on a tiyul, Bnei Akiva, all right? You're going in Lower Merion, you're going on a tiyul in Pennsylvania, you're thinking you're in Eretz HaKodesh, you're going on a tiyul, this is the way Israel looks, trees and everything, flowers. Someone gives a clap, time for mincha. No, the boys go over on one side, where are the girls? They're davening, right or wrong. Where's your mechitza? Got the question? Do you need a mechitza? So Reb Moshe has asked this question, and he says very simply that the minig is that if it's not a makom kavua for davening, what he calls a makom arai, then you don't need a mechitza. And the women should go stand on the side, and like our minigas, as we see the Nohag in Klal Yisrael. But you know what's amazing? And he just mentions this Kliyach Yad. V'hine b'chol hadarat nahagusha lefamim haitanich neset isha niya leveit hamedrash lekabel tztaka. O avela loma kadesh. And he describes that we always saw women might come in standing back, a poor woman collecting tztaka, or a woman comes in to say kaddish. And he says, shelefamim, says, meshlech hadarot. So you see, Reb Moshe takes it for granted. It's not even a shaila. He just mentions it. Doesn't have to get involved. This is not. This is Minig Yisrael. This is what they did. Dorei Dora. Talavai, we should be from like the generation that Rav Henkin is describing, the Rav is describing, and that Moshe Feinstein is describing. So halacha l'maisa, I have brought many more solid proofs that women, if they wish to say Kaddish, adarabba v'adarabba. My students, what have we done today? All right, it was a hard day for me personally. To eulogize a Talmud and died so suddenly. So many plans yet, the clouds. But all right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu willed otherwise. You know how he died? No one even knew he died. That's the whole story is epic making. Friends supposed to meet at Yad Vashem, he never showed. And he was a responsible kid. He never called. They called, there's no answer. So they called another friend, also a Talmud of mine, Rabbi Bishel, Aaron Bishel. He's married to a Talmidah of mine, Leora Reich. And they call, no answer. So they got suspicious, they called the police. Aaron Bishel had a key, thank God, so the police didn't have to break the door down. The police walked in first, and they came back with let no one in, seal the apartment. Only later did they let Bishel identify the body. Now the body, he was found on the floor in the Beis Medrash he built in the house he was living in, on the floor in Talis and Tefillin. He had trouble with his feet, which they did know, and that was on the way to being cured. And he evidently didn't go to shul, living in the Beis Medrash. He couldn't walk too far, and he was found with Talit and Tefillin. The air conditioning was on, so the body was well kept. There wasn't the decay that it would have. The police estimated he was dead 2 days. One thing is for sure, they found the body on Tuesday, so it couldn't have been Shabbos. He had Tefillin on. So they reached the conclusion that it had to be Sunday. We'll never know for sure, but it doesn't matter. It's not the end of the world. You can assume that date is the yard site. The other half of the story is what I told you, the Rebbe's story with me, that here I am in New York, a million miles away, and my Yetzer Hara leads me every day to the computer, to the websites I love to see. And one of them is B'Olamam Shel Charedim. And people don't realize I know the guy. He was married to a student of mine. I know him and his father. I enjoy seeing him come bandava. It's my relaxation. So here I am on Chaim Schulzen's website, and I take a look. Harav Yosef Klausner died, no one to sit shiva. So I say to my wife, is this the Klaus? But it doesn't say he changed his name, at least he used the name Yedidja, Klausner Yedidja. So then I said to Malka, you know, maybe he didn't change his name legally. It's not like him as Rakefet. It really is Rakefet. Maybe he just used Yedidja. This could be him, and I really don't. At that second, the phone rings. That's my Talmud, Normie Gold, calling Dr. Gold. Sherry just sent them an email that the Klaus just died. They're trying to reach me. And they wanted to know if he has relatives in Israel, you know. So I knew that my dear friends, the Lambs, are in Avram, you taught him in what grade in Ramaz?
Sixth.
Third grade, 8 years old, and Rabbi Lamb kept the relationship with him until today, and Chaya Lamb. And I called, and Chaya was on the phone a minute later with Israel, and she tackled and covered. What's it, a third cousin, I believe, they uncovered. Something like it. But all right, it's very sad, but we have to go further, and I hope in the call they'll remember the clowns and what he did. All right, let me, and then we spoke about Kaddish, and we set the stage. By the way, next week, there are no classes. Rosh Hashanah knocks us out. I mean, we have to understand what Rosh Hashanah is. I hope we'll leave that for another time. And the week afterwards, there are classes, and then there are no classes till the week after Sukkot. Because the week afterwards, Sunday, Monday, there are classes. Tuesday is Erev Yom Kippur. Wednesday is Yom Kippur.
Was it that volume on who published it?
It's privately published.
All right, who are the two guys?
One second. I'll give you the name in a second. David Birnbaum and Martin Cohn, New Paradigm Matex. I don't even know what those words mean. Paradigm? How do I pronounce it? P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M. How do you pronounce it?
Paradigm.
Matex. M-A-T-I-X. Okay, so then we have class. We pick up, we have the Sukkot Spears about the Shem. Tomorrow, I wouldn't miss class for all the atomic bombs down in Dimona. Take my word for it, there are quite a few, but it's not worth missing class tomorrow if you have a soul that longs for the history of Torah in modern times, particularly in the United States. That's 9:05 tomorrow. The freebies. Yitzchak, this is for you. From the Sheyurim. Anyone interested? One second. This is on Fiddler on the Roof. Believe it or not, Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish is selling like crazy. This is an unbelievable story. A guy named Rosenfeld, who taught at Ramaz, taught at Tsar Academy, and now, so many years later, is being accused of being a pedophile, lo aleinu, and Ramaz had to invest a fortune of money to hire a professional team like YU did. You read the report, unbelievable. This is lo aleinu, a YU graduate, the Washington tragedy, and how the lawsuit has been settled with Freundel, who my wife calls Fraudel. It's unbelievable. Millions and millions of dollars are going to be paid out by insurance companies.
Why? Why should they cover it?
Read it, you'll see. Of course, he photo. And this, I have a number of copies. This is about Rav Kook. Unbelievable story. There are about four copies here. It's about Rav Kook. He was working on, what was it, a get or something? And they were Edim, and he goes to Dav Mincha, and his Mincha takes him from Mincha to Mariv, unbelievable, and no one knew what he was doing. And then he comes back, it's nighttime, so they can't finish what they were doing to get. It turns out he saw one of the people who was supposed to be an aide had a piece of paper from his office with the office letterhead, and he was scribbling on it, and Rav Kook was chayshish, he's a ganav, you follow? He took something from the office that wasn't his, so he didn't want him to be an aide. So he didn't want to embarrass him, so he spent the whole afternoon davening. It was a Rebbe's story, it's interesting. If it's true or not, don't ask me. Until we meet again.
So he couldn't finish the get at night.
Right, he couldn't finish the get at night. They had to wait till the next morning, he got a new aide. That's the story. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Okay, now let's see if I'm smart enough to turn this off.
Why you?
Go to Rakefet. It'll lead you to whyutorah.com. Now, .org, whatever. What? Middle button.
See, to save recording. Save recording.
No, it doesn't say save recording. It says recording.
I'm afraid I don't want to do anything.